So last time I talked about Bell's theorem and the Bell inequalities, and I derived a set of inequalities using the assumption that you had these kind of result functions. Like so. And if you look at those, well, the one clear assumption is the assumption of locality, that what happens at this end doesn't depend on the choice of setting at the other end. But you might think there's another assumption, which is determinism. It seems like, according to this, that the result you get, whether it's plus one or minus one, is fully determined by the setting and the hidden variables. And so that leaves open the possibility that you can get around this violation of Bell inequalities simply by removing the assumption of determinism. Okay. So that doesn't work. And it turns out you can derive the Bell, Clauser-Horn, Shimanini-Holt inequalities if, instead of using these result functions like this, you assume that you have probabilities at each of the two ends. So at end A, you have a probability A of seeing plus or minus one, given certain settings and certain result function. And likewise at N2, at NB, you have probability plus or minus one. And if you do this, then you can define joint probabilities. It's the probability that you see plus or minus one at the Alice end, plus or minus one at the Bob end, conditioned on these settings, where you simply multiply these probabilities together and integrate. Like so. Wow, the audience doubled in size from when I last looked at you. Okay. Yeah, so I'm just finishing off the topic of Bell inequalities. So you can define this, and then with this, you can also derive the Clauser-Horn Shimanini-Holt Bell inequalities. And those are violated by quantum theory. So you don't need the assumption of determinism, which is implicit here. The subject, there's a vast number of papers by now on Bell's theorem. It's funny that the paper by John Bell, he wrote it in 1964, and then there were no citations at all for 4 years, 5 years until 69, and then slowly the number of citations increased, and by now it's cited at a tremendous rate. So it's one of those slow burn papers that really took off. So there's a tremendous amount, and it's really difficult to pick out to survey all of this subject. So let me just say a few things that I think are interesting. So one thing you can do is you can set up the sort of space of the various probabilities that you have And so you can take this thing, you can take probability of A, B. And you set up a space of a number of joint probabilities like that. Let's just represent that space in two dimensions, although it's really, you know, more like a sort of an 8 or a 16 dimensional space, depending on how you define it. And then inside this space, you can represent each Bell inequality by a hyperplane. And there are a bunch of different Bell inequalities, which, and this is just a schematic drawing. This is in no way accurate. And if you're inside here, then you satisfy all the Bell inequalities. And so your theory is local with regard to the sort of various settings that you're considering. And quantum theory, if you look at the predictions of quantum theory, well, quantum theory is kind of curved like this, and it goes outside this space. It also allows correlations that are inside here, but it allows correlations that are outside. So this is this inner thing here is the sort of local polytope. This here, this curved surface are the quantum correlations. And you can draw one more region, which would be the no signaling polytope. So now you demand that it's not possible to send signals using the correlations. And what you get then, this is the limits of this schematic drawing are starting to be revealed here. So what you get then is another polytope, I'm drawing this badly, and I think it includes the previous two areas. And please don't read too much into this diagram. It's just a rough diagram. So you get the no signaling. So the local polytope is inside the quantum correlations area, and then the quantum correlations are inside the no signaling, because you can't use quantum theory to send signals in these settings. And lots of people think about, you know, ways to constrain the correlations so that rather than having the full no signaling set of correlations, you have some restricted set of correlations, which are the quantum ones. What are the constraints that bring you down to the quantum correlations? Another fun thing you can do is you can write down correlations which are still no signaling but stronger than the quantum correlations. And there's something called the Popescu-Rolick box. This provides correlations between the two ends which maximally violates the Clauser-Horn-Shimini-Holt inequalities. What I mean by that is, if you remember, we have this object. And each of these quantities E can take maximum value plus, or sorry, maximum minimum values plus and minus one. So you can find correlations that which make this equal to plus one, this equal to plus one, this equal to plus one, and this equal to minus one, so that the total sum is four. But these correlations are non-quantum. They violate quantum theory if you can't get there. But they're theoretically interesting. Okay. And then there's a bunch of applications that use Bell's theorem in different ways. And let me just pick out the two that I think are most interesting. One, or most direct, let's say, maybe not most interesting, but most direct. One is the there's a subject existed in computer science, in information theory, before people started thinking about quantum theory in that subject, called communication complexity. And the problem here is that you have two parties, or more than two parties, maybe. So let's consider two, Alice and Bob. And they want to calculate a function of some number, typically an integer in some given range, which is given to Alice, and some other number, also an integer in some range, which is given to Bob. So they want to output this number. Now, in order to do that, they're typically going to have to communicate to output this the value of this function. And the communication complexity is the amount of communication they have to do. And you might allow them, in the classical context, to share some sort of random information beforehand, you know, before they're given these numbers. But then afterwards, you start to count every bit they have to send back and forth. That contributes to the communication complexity. And it turns out, in quantum theory, if you allow entanglement, you can beat the best classical communication complexity schemes for certain functions. Okay. The first example of this, it used, rather than just two parties, it used three parties. Alice, Bob, and Carol, I guess. And they used a state called a GHZ state. So there's one kind of application. And another application is device independent quantum cryptography. So here you want to set up a cryptographic scheme between two parties, and that entails sharing a key which is secret from anyone who's eavesdropping on you. There's been over the years, various quantum schemes to try and do that. Up until the subject of device-independent quantum cryptography, all of those quantum schemes assumed that, well, A, quantum theory was true, but also B, that your devices were working according to quantum theory in a way that you understood. Okay. So you had to believe that your devices were actually using quantum theory in the way you thought they were. And what device-independent quantum cryptography does is it allows you to just rely on some correlations to share a secret key without having to assume that your devices are working according to quantum theory in a way that you understand, as long as you get correlations which violate Bell inequalities. So that's become a big subject as well. Okay, so that's everything I want to say on Bell.
Yeah. I have one question. So, in QFT, are we working in local polytope or in quantum correlations?
Sorry, what was this? What? Sorry.
In quantum field theory.
Oh, right.
Are we restricted to local polytope or in quantum correlations?
You're in here. You can in quantum field theory. You can in quantum field theory. You can violate Bell inequalities, so you're outside the local polytope.
Okay.
In fact, you can even extract entanglement from the vacuum if you have two atoms that are initially uncorrelated, they sit in a vacuum, then the vacuum has entanglement in it, and they will become correlated. It's a subject called entanglement harvesting, which is quite a big subject at the University of Waterloo. So you can, It's, any other questions on the subject of Bell's theorem? Go ahead.
Maybe I missed it, but did we discuss how that the Bell's inequality, when it is violated for quantum theory, we cannot describe it using local hidden variable models?
So that was so I showed you this like on Friday. I showed you how to derive Bell's inequalities using these result functions, which have built into them the assumption of locality. Well, and today I mentioned you can also even do it with these probability functions as well. So you derive some inequalities based on that assumption. And then if those inequalities are violated, that implies that your assumptions were wrong. So so that's the proof that you're asking for. Quantum theory violates the assumptions of local, what's sometimes referred to as local realism.
And we talk about locality being the one which is problematic, but we don't talk about realism, right?
Oh, okay, right. Okay, good question. Great. So I think which is the problematic feature depends on who you ask. However, in a sense, everything that goes into that derivation is up for question. You can challenge anything. Now, determinism isn't something you can challenge because you can get to the same result with indeterminism. But the assumption that there is some sort of thing that's described by lambda, you could say try to challenge that. There's another thing you can challenge, which is called counterfactual definiteness. Okay, this is more of a philosophical term. The assumption of counterfactual definiteness is that when something happens over there, okay, maybe there's one of two possible outcomes, then it's true that thing has happened. Even if I'm over here. So there is a definite result. Even if I don't know what it is, there is a definite result over there, which sounds like a crazy thing to question. But in the many worlds interpretation, where you have branching, if you're over here, it's not really clear which world you're in. So even though you've had some event over there go one way or the other, you don't have that here. And so so the many worlds interpretation can leverage that, and some people who are proponents of the many worlds interpretation claim that it's a local theory because it doesn't have to have the property of counterfactual definiteness. And you can even build interesting toy models that leverage the notion of leverage violating counterfactual definiteness to show how you can avoid the conclusions of Bell. So if you like the many worlds interpretation, then that's one more reason to support it. Any more questions on Bell's theorem? Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
I have a question on device-independent quantum cryptography.
Yep.
You said that these models are devices as working outside of the range of quantum theory as we understand it. What do you mean exactly?
So what I meant was you don't have to assume that your device is working according to quantum theory, as long as you've got the correlations. So as long as your experiment produces correlations that violate Bell's inequality, then you can use those correlations to do to share a secret key without having to assume that your devices are working in some way that you understand. And it could even be that the physics of those devices is beyond quantum theory. There is an assumption in these schemes, and the assumption is that you cannot actually signal faster than light. So if your underlying physics, if there is some underlying physics which actually allows faster light signaling, then this breaks down. But under the assumption that you can't actually communicate faster light, then it doesn't matter what the real physics is describing the devices, you can still share a key.
So that's basically skip the part of how it gets straight to having a correlation between two parts and use that to...
Yeah. So you can think of it like this. The correlations have, they're kind of strange because you can't use them to signal, and yet they have this kind of non-locality in there. And you can leverage that to show that if an eavesdropper was able to gain information about the key you're trying to share, she would effectively be seeing the hidden variables at a deep at a sufficiently deep level that scheme would allow fast and light signaling. So you're protected. So the eavesdropper is prevented from the physical idea that you can't signal faster than light, and that's what powers those. Okay. Right. I should probably move on. I think it's a big subject. Is there any more questions? And then I'll move on. Okay. Great. Okay.
I guess I have another question.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know if there have been any attempts of deriving similar inequalities for non-local hidden variables?
Depends what you mean by non-local hidden variable theories. Typically to derive some constraints, you need something which is actually a constraint. So you could have signaling. Or no signaling as a constraint. So you could say, well, I allow non-locality, but I don't actually allow signaling. And then you can derive constraints. These would be the ones that I'm talking about here. It's no signaling polytope. You typically need some actual constraint, and then you can derive inequalities. Okay. So let's move on to the next topic. So what I want to do now is to start to talk about interpretations. But before I talk about specific interpretations, I want to set up the landscape of possible interpretations. To do that, I'm going to use the Harrigan-Speckens classification scheme. Okay. Okay, so this concerns what they call ontological models. So it's an ontological model framework. So you take... So imagine we have some hidden variables which belong to some space. And here I'm talking about, maybe I should be clear what the situation is I'm talking about. Here we imagine we have some box, which is a preparation. And it prepares a system in a certain state. And then we have a measurement. And the measurement can have possible outcomes, which we'll label by k. And lambda conveys information about the preparation to the measurement. Um, So we're using the symbol lambda that we used before for hidden variables. Although now we're not going to make the restriction of locality. And so these lambda specify the ontic state. What I mean by that is these lambda specify the state of reality pertaining to this system that's released from the preparation device towards the measurement device. And then here, this is the state space, or the ontic state space. Okay. And you can think of that like this. We have some space like this, and now we have this preparation P, and for that preparation, we imagine that there is a probability of or a probability density of preparing a particular ontic state. So we have some distribution like this. Okay. Is that clear? Now we have this situation, we have a preparation, the ontic state is released, and then we have a measurement, we have outcomes for the measurement. We say that the probability for a certain outcome, of a certain measurement, given that you had preparation P, is equal to this. So it's equal to, well, the probability, the value of the of this distribution function for that preparation for that for a given lambda. And then we have here a response function. So given the particular lambda that comes into this box, and given the particular measurement, there's a certain probability density for a certain outcome. Let's assume these things are discrete, so a certain probability. And then we integrate over lambda to get this object. Okay. Is that clear? If this was an ontological module for quantum theory, then it would have, if it's for quantum theory, we would have that this thing was equal to the prediction from quantum theory. So in quantum theory, associated with preparation, you have a certain density matrix. And then associated with a measurement outcome, you have a positive operator. could be a projection operator. And then to get the probability, you take the trace, like so. Okay. So what I want to do now is to give you a bunch of definitions based on this ontological framework, and the different interpretations will fit into this kind of classification scheme that we're going to put in place. So first of all, psi-completeness. So the idea of psi-completeness is that that lambda is just the quantum state. I'm representing the quantum state by in the pure state case. So I'm representing the quantum state by this object, because if you just represent it by this, you have an overall phase that has no physical significance. But if you represent it like this, then the overall phase disappears. And you can think of that in the following terms. You can say, if you draw this graph here, that basically you have delta functions hard to draw for each of the different each of the different states. And these delta functions are non-overlapping. Distribution looks like that. So we can talk about theories that are psi-complete and psi-incomplete. And to give you a heads up, a psi-complete theory, for example, would be the de Broglie. No, sorry, would be the many worlds interpretation or various CLAPS models. Then you can also talk about psi incomplete models. This just means not psi complete. The next one that's interesting is psi-ontic models. For a psi-ontic model, you can look at the hidden variable lambda and determine the state. What that means, to draw draw it down like this. Is that your distributions for different states? This is your distribution for a state psi, and here's a distribution for another state. They have to be non-overlapping. And that has to be true for every pair of states. Pair of, I should say, distinct. And this is potentially, let me just give an example. Imagine you have two states. Like this. Where A and A prime, they could be almost equal, and correspondingly B and B prime would be almost equal, but not quite equal to each other. Then in a psiontic model, the corresponding distributions over the hidden variables would be non-overlapping. Any questions? Missing one. Okay. So I'm just gonna give a few more definitions. Then psi epistemic so epistemic is a word from philosophy. It sort of means having to do with knowledge. And in this context, a psi epistemic theory is one which is not psiontic. So that means that if you have this then for at least one pair of pure states you have some overlap. And if the lambda that's produced by your box is in here, then you don't know if the box was produced by a preparation of psi or psi prime. Okay. And the motivation for this is to sort of make it more similar to classical probability theories. You know, if you have a box which produces a coin, which is in a state heads or tails, but you don't know which, then the distribution of one preparation which is biased towards heads, for example, and another distribution which is biased towards tails, those two distributions would overlap. Although, of course, those distributions would not be pure distributions, whereas here we are talking about pure distributions. Any questions so far? Okay. And then just one more definition. Are psi supplemented. The idea of psi supplemented is that the quantum state is part, is that your state, your hidden variables consist of something which is basically the quantum state, and then some additional variables. So to represent this, I've had to increase the dimension of my graph by one. So we have this additional this omega here. And then if we have different states in this, represent them in this sort of direction by being delta functions onto psi, onto the psi axis, and then they, let's do this better, they're sort of distributions, hope I'm drawing this well, they're distributions, so the delta functions in this direction, and then they are distributions in the omega direction. So now let me just put all these different spaces together on one diagram. So we have these two cases are psiontic. That means the quantum state is part, is effectively part of the description of your state. Over here, you have psi epistemic. Then here we have theories where psi is complete. And here we have the psi incomplete ones. So there's two ways for psi not to be a complete description. It could be because you have additional variables. This will be the case in the de Broglie-Bohr model. Or it could be because the psi is not a sufficient, it could be because the hidden variables don't tell you what psi is. Okay. Let's see, what time is it? We have 10 minutes. So what I want to do now is to draw a flowchart. And this flowchart will take these three blackboards. So maybe if you're writing on paper, you want to leave enough room to get it all on. What I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a bunch of sort of yes-no questions. So it's a flowchart that you can go through, and it leads you to different interpretations. Okay, so the first question. Is there real stuff? This is the realism question that came up earlier. So is the world such that you can think of it as being made of some kind of real stuff? Well, one answer is no. And then it's difficult, really, to say what you mean by an interpretation if there isn't any kind of reality out there. You might perhaps think that the world is made up of our thoughts. Certainly, philosophers pursue that idea. It's called idealism. So the other answer is yes, which I will explore. And then there's kind of a third answer, which is reality, but not as we know it. Or at least not as this ontological models framework understands it. And there's a bunch of interpretations in this box, which I think belong in here. So one would be the Copenhagen interpretation. There are about as many different versions of the Copenhagen interpretation as there are people who claim to understand what the Copenhagen interpretation is. So I'm not going to attempt to explain what it is in any great detail. I think that maybe a good place to start is that paper by Niels Bohr that I referred to, the response to the EPR argument. So people who pursue this interpretation often say they are realists, and yet it's not entirely clear what picture of reality they're giving you. So another thing which I'm going to put in this box is cubism. This is the interpretation. The primary advocate of it is Chris Fuchs. Again, I'm not going to attempt to describe it. because I'll get it wrong, but it's sort of based around the idea that probabilities should be ascribed to agents. So a probability is something you should ascribe to an agent. This is one way of understanding, you know, what you mean by probabilities. That probabilities are states of belief, and then they try to leverage that into an interpretation of quantum theory. They would claim that they are realists, but I think it's an incomplete project. So they don't have an actual prescription for reality, rather that it's something they're aiming towards. It's my understanding. And then there's maybe one other approach which might be in here, which is Carlo Rovelli's relationalism. And I'm not going to attempt to explain that interpretation either, but there's lots of papers out there if you're interested. But so let's continue along here, the yes direction. And so if there is real stuff, you can ask if the quantum state is part of that real stuff. If the answer is no, then you're in a psi epistemic model. And there aren't any good psi epistemic models. There are some sort of ad hoc versions, but there's no good psi epistemic interpretations. Okay, so that leaves yes. So if psi is real, so we're in a psi-ontic approach, so we're here, then we can ask whether, whether it's psi-complete or psi-supplemented. And if we say no, well, so it's psi supplemented. Then there is at least one good psi supplemented model. And that's the de Broglie-Bohm model. And I will spend the next lecture talking about the de Broglie-Bohm model. So that finally leaves us here in the yes. So if we're in the yes side here, So we're a psi-complete model. There's no additional variables in addition to the wave function. Then we can ask, is there collapse? Or not. So if the answer is no, so that means everything is unitary, then we end up in the many worlds interpretation. And so I'll give, I think, one lecture on the many worlds interpretation. And if the answer is yes, then we have a collapse model. And there are many collapse models out there. This field was really invented by Philip Pearl. And the most famous collapse model is the one due to Gherardi, Rimini, and Weber. So that's and that I think is gives you a sort of idea of the sort of landscape of different interpretations that are out there. Certainly the realist interpretations. Okay, I'll stop there.